Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. I am so delighted to welcome my friend Martha Collard to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. Welcome, Martha. We haven't seen each other for a while, but I'm going to start off with how we met. I was staying with a friend in Jay Smith, our common friend in the Hamptons, and Martha was conducting a training for, what would you call it, Martha? Gong?
It's basically gong training, how to play a gong, 101.
And I was fortunate enough to have many treatments from Martha and her students. And I, while I was there, I actually went to the doctor and my blood pressure plummeted from this exposure to this magic. So I am a believer, and I probably need to talk to Martha later about how I find someone to do this work with me in Michigan. But Martha is talking to me from Hong Kong today. And she is the founder of Red Door Studio. I'm delighted to have you, Martha. And I'd like you to start with a little bit of your professional background, because I think it's so fascinating where you've come from and the pivot you've made to what you do now.
Right. Well, I'm delighted to be here. So thank you for inviting me. And it's great to see you again. As well, it's been almost a, well, been a few months, and I mean, my professional life, I spent 28 years in management consulting, freelance consulting in Hong Kong, and largely in the area of people and performance, anything from a partner in executive search firm to career counseling to doing training needs assessment and leadership development, et cetera, throughout Asia. And my last gig was setting up a holistic wellness platform for a high-end retailer in Hong Kong for 5,400 people in Greater China from scratch. And I've always been interested in alternative practices. So starting yoga in 1989, I founded the Yoga Society. I'm just curious, you know, anything from family constellation to Reiki to, I mean, I was doing Reiki in the 90s, you know, and all these different things. And my curiosity led me to explore Kundalini yoga. And I had one class in Kundalini and I just felt happy. And then I went and did the teacher training in New Mexico. And I, during 28 days of teacher training, they gave us one hour gong bath. I had never done this before, right? And they just said, lie down and close your eyes. And, you know, we were so tired and it was just like, yes, please, you know, Shavasana. And then they started playing a gong and I was transported. I flew through the universe and witnessed the Big Bang. And I bought a gong and I put it in my studio in my office. So I had a beautiful corner office that was sort of the playroom for the staff. And I didn't know anything about gongs. And, you know, I read books and I looked at the videos on YouTube and people would come in with jet lag or shoulder pain, whatever, you know, the aches and pains of corporate life, and I'd fix them. And a year later, I had a second gong bath in Canada and my kidney stone dissolved. So I was even more convinced of the efficacy of gongs. And a few months later, a friend said, let's go meet Don Conroe. And I'm like, oh, you know, gong god. All right. He's been doing this nonstop for 52 years. And he's actually visiting my studio as I speak.
Oh, nice.
And for my 8th anniversary. And so at the end of that workshop in Slovenia, my friend said, Don, come to Shanghai. And I was emboldened and said, come to Hong Kong. And he said, okay. And it was only when I got back to Hong Kong that I thought, oh my God, what have I done? And I spoke to my boss and she said, well, you know, why don't you set up your own studio? You've done your job here. You've got 3,000 participants a month. You've done what you set out to do. And so I did. I used my own savings. And within six weeks, I opened the first and only dedicated gong center in Asia.
And talk to me.
Still here.
Yeah. You're still here. Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
I'm curious. You had told me that you actually did some research with executives.
Yeah.
And could you tell me about that? Because I think that's fascinating.
Well, one of the challenges with gongs is that it's completely experiential. There's very little research on it, simply because the instrument, it's impossible to play it the same way twice. All right. It's that sensitive to energy. And so last year during COVID, I was invited by Svaram Sound Institute in India to participate in a self-directed research project. And I had 24 hours to come up with a theme. And my project was gonging executives for 20 minutes once a week. And before and after, we did aura imaging and we did photos and we did questionnaires, et cetera, trying to capture data to show any changes whatsoever before and after. And at the end of 12 weeks, with just 20 minutes of gonging once a week, we had 100% improvement in sleep. We had an 83% decrease in perceived stress. And we had a 72% improvement in overall well-being. And, you know, it was just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal results.
It's amazing. So what is your vision for the world and the planet and the future for how this modality can help us all?
Oh, God. Well, last year, I also was featured in a movie, a full-length 90-minute film called We All Need to Gong. And, you know, the tagline there was that everybody should just go out and buy a gong. Well, they're really hard to get because there's only a handful of people that make high quality gongs. And I think we all need access to gongs. And as a vision for gong players around the world, we want to raise the energy of the planet and get people harmonizing together. And that means removing stress, removing energetic blockages, and just creating a sense of peace and well-being. And we do that by bringing people to a still point. And gongs are incredibly effective for that. And so once you're in that still point, you know, you can actually look at situations and you can respond rather than react to them. And the world would be, just imagine if we actually took a step back and thought before we responded to conflicts, you know, the world would be a better place.
I believe everything you're saying. I talk to colleagues a lot about, you know, there's this big push for everyone to meditate and use meditation apps. And I think there's a lot of paths to slowing down. You know, for some people it's fishing. For some people, it's walking. For some, you know, for myself, a big practice I have is to work 4 days a week because I really need 3 days when I'm not working. And I think gongs fall into that category. The cool thing for me is it's very passive. Like as a recipient, I don't have to do much. But tell me, you know, in your 8 years of having your own studio and teaching others, tell me what it's like to be a gong practitioner.
Wow. Well, I feel that I'm inspired to do this and that I have a natural affinity for this practice. So I'm also at a stage in my life where my children are grown. So, you know, I guess my overheads are lower, which is significant. But so for me, it's a life of service, and to me, it's not work. This is my passion. It's my life. It's what I do. And it's incredibly fulfilling to, you know, every day I get an opportunity to change someone's life for the better. And it's not about how much money I can make or how famous I'm going to get. That doesn't come into play whatsoever. It's about making a difference in other people's lives and removing the pain, improving sleep, and just giving them a slice of something they can't get on their own right now. You know, and as you said earlier about meditation, and everybody says, go meditate. People get so anxious trying to meditate that they, you know, we can't sit still. We're, you know, the humans, what was it? They have an attention span of 8 seconds, which is less than a goldfish. So, you know, how can we possibly meditate with this monkey mind? We have to detune. We have to, you know, break that cycle of anxiety and the need to, you know, watch our phones or respond all the time. And the gongs are an incredibly powerful tool that you cannot fight it. You know, once you're lying down, and that's the beauty of it, it's completely passive, as you said. So it's accessible to everyone, any age. All you have to do is lie down and receive. And one gong, you can do one-on-one. I can do 200 people at a music festival with great effectiveness, you know, for an hour or whatever, because the gong absorbs all the sounds around it. And I sort of keep you captured in my sound bubble or sound envelope until I'm sort of finished with you and release you. And you're in that happy gong state. Yeah.
So what has been the reaction of like companies? Like, I know you were working for a company that was more of a thought leader on health and wellness, and they hired you to create health and wellness within the organization. What is the appetite out there for this, you know, to be brought into organizations?
It's very slow. I do a lot of one-offs because companies have wellness initiatives where they dabble in many different modalities. So I'll go in and I'll do like one day here, one day there, and I'll do 3 or 4 sessions and have a number of participants or, you know, World Wellness Week. You know, I get booked out to do individual sessions. Some of my students, I have, as of yet, I will be honest, I am still seeking the enlightened corporate that would introduce this on a regular basis. Having said that, I have students who were senior executives who bought gongs, and because of their position in the organization, they were able to play regularly for their staff. And to you know, and it was extremely well received.
Yeah.
So it's about getting the commitment of the senior leadership, which is true for any wellness initiative.
That's fascinating. Talk to me about what it takes. So you teach others to do this. Mm-hmm. What does it take? What is there any prerequisites? Like, what does it take to be trained by Martha?
Actually, you know, it's pretty low hanging fruit. I mean, it's just an interest, really. I mean, I had one student who was so skeptical. It was at the beginning of COVID. It was a guy, and I'm like, you know, we're doing our little introductions. Why are you here? And he says, well, I had nothing else to do and it sounded interesting. And it's like, okay. And at the end of level one, he signed up for level two. And it's like, why are you doing level two? And he says, well, actually, I think it's quite interesting now, you know. And so then he did level three. And it's like, why are you here still? And he said, oh, I've already bought three gongs. And he was buying them for his mother and for other people. And it's one of those things that initially people come to learn how to play because they've had some sort of transformative experience during a gong bath. You know, reading about it doesn't work. You have to experience one. And that's why I have played for anyone, anywhere, you know, since Diddly Squat. I've played in underground bars, ecstatic dance parties, dancing in the dark, on top of shopping malls, beaches, mountaintops, on a boat. I mean, you know, it's like
That sounds like a fun documentary. I think we need to have a film crew follow you around. But I do love this idea that anyone at any age, really, could be of service in a new way. And it's not like yoga where you have to know anatomy, or massage therapy where you have to touch people. It's just really accessible to anyone that has an interest. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I firmly believe that anyone can play a gong. And but to play for other people and to do it well with, you know, and what I mean by well is holding the space, and it's your level of consciousness that will dictate the effectiveness of the gongs. All right.
So there has to be curiosity, but also good intentions. And
yeah, exactly. And it's all about setting an intention and holding that intention while you play. But it's hard, you know, you're holding that intention, you're playing, you're watching the time, you're checking the temperature of the room, you know, any noises, any snores, you're going out and making sure they stop snoring, you know, so, you know, you're active, but you still have to hold that space for the audience, because they're basically in a very susceptible and receptive state when they're lying there. And, you know, they're in this very peaceful state as well. And there's no tension in the body whatsoever. And you can see that they're in dreamland. And it's like being a mother to, you know, a large audience or to a large brood, and you're just tending to their needs. Yeah. And you tend to their needs largely through your playing.
And then there's the practical side of, you have to be able to transport your gong from one place to another, right?
Yeah, that's a big one. But, you know, now, I mean, when you met me, I had a 42-inch titanium with me, and that titanium gongs have been a real game changer, because previously I would travel with a 32-inch nickel silver gong, and, you know, significantly heavier and, you know, just a lot more awkward. And you need to have a certain amount of physical strength to carry them. I don't know very many other gong players that actually get on airplanes with their gongs the way I do.
Yeah. And I guess you check your gong and trust the airline will take good care of it, or how does that work?
So far so good. The biggest gong that I traveled with was a 48-inch titanium. That was for the Global Wellness Summit in Singapore in 2019. And I took her to New York, actually, in 2020 as well. But she's a little bit too big, and they got, you know, they were a little annoyed at me at the airport when I was checking in. They checked it in. But when I got to the gate, they're like, "Oh, you're very naughty. It was too big to fit on the whatever okay. through the hole," and they had to take it out the back door or something. But so that's why I travel with a smaller gong. But you know, and this is a problem. I mean, I met people in the U.S. that had 60-inch gongs, and I'm like, wow, that's great, you know, but what do you want to do with it? And they're like, oh, we're going to take it around, we're going to heal people and this and that. And I'm like, how do you lift it? I mean, a 36 inch weighs 36 pounds, and a 60, I mean, how could you get it out of the house by yourself? So I have a sort of a policy for myself that everything in my studio, I have to be able to lift by myself.
Well, you know, keeps you in shape too, right?
Well, definitely, you know, definitely. Yeah.
Let's go back, Martha, to the history of gongs, because earlier you mentioned Buddha. So let's go way back and, you know, leverage your expertise on the history. Like, where did gongs come from?
Well, we're still trying to figure that one out. But we think that gongs originated about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, about the time that metal was first discovered. And it's interesting because there's evidence of gongs in Northwest China on the Silk Road. There's evidence of gongs in Vietnam, India, and the Middle East, all about the same time. And it's believed that, you know, gong or metal was first discovered in the bottom of bread ovens, right? The metal leached out of the rocks because of the high temperatures. And when they opened up the oven, they saw, you know, ding, 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 the metal inside. And then they started looking for heavier rocks, and some bright spark put one in and completely changed the sound characteristics of the metal. And it's believed that was a meteorite, and meteorites contain nickel. And this is why gongs are considered to have a connection with the universe. All right. And the people that made gongs were considered spiritual leaders for their communities. And this is true in anywhere you find gongs, whether it's in Africa or the Middle East or Asia. Only the wealthy in Asia could afford them. And in many cultures, they were used for scaring the devil, you know, announcing the arrival of important people. So think of the New York Stock Exchange. They used to have a gong, right? They bang a gong every now and then when, you know, for IPOs. And in the time of Buddha, he sent an edict out that all Chinese gongs would be engraved with the characters Dai Loi, meaning happiness has arrived. So the quatrain is actually darkness is gone and happiness has arrived. And yeah, it was thought at that time that gongs cured addictions and depression, because when you experience a gong bath or a gong relaxation, your body starts secreting those happy hormones and your parasympathetic nervous system kicks in. So it starts to balance. So your brain gets, you know, we can break down the, you know, the neural network and rebuild it with proper connections so that you can regain that sense of wholeness and you don't need the drugs, particularly nowadays. And my belief is that we can all achieve mental health without medication. I mean, that to me should be the goal, rather than being addicted to medication for the rest of our lives. We should be looking for modalities that will help us wean ourselves off pills over a period of time. And it's not going to work for everybody. I understand that. But surely we can use it as an adjunct. It's not either or, but why not combine them and then see what happens? But I think we were born without medication. I think, we're meant to live without medication. And all these energetic blockages or problems that we have on a physical level, a lot of them can be remedied or alleviated through sound. And more research in that area has been done, not on gongs, but on sound, particularly electronically generated sound.
And what are you most looking forward to this year? What do you have cooking?
Oh, gosh. Well, I just found out today that I won the gold branding award for Hong Kong, which is a big
congratulations.
Deal.
Amazing.
Thank you. I'll be teaching again in the Hamptons in June. I have my teacher, Don Conroe, is in Hong Kong right now, and we have a very large concert on Sunday, which is already sold out, and we'll have 25 performers, and members of my old band will be there as well. So this will be the first large concert for humanity in Hong Kong, and the first big event for me in almost 3 years because of the protests and COVID as well. I've been invited to go to some islands in the South Pacific to set up sound at some 5-star resorts there. I've received an invitation to go to Japan to, this is really interesting, to perform with plants. Okay, so you can put sensors in plants in the soil and on their leaves, and plants talk, right? They make noise. And it was, I think the original research was done by some Israelis, and it's really interesting. And if you play classical music to them and things, the plants have very harmonious sounds that come out of them. Whereas if you play like heavy metal or something, it's like static electricity. It's very funny. So they want me to come and play with plants. So that's going to come up. And, you know, Titanic, Jack at the table when he's in his best bib and tuckers, you know, and he's sitting at the table and they say, well, Jack, you know, what's up for you? And I feel like him because I never know from one day to the next what's going to happen. And, you know, these offers come in and, you know, the movie and this, you, and it's like, it keeps getting better. And I have no idea where this boat is going, but it's sort of fun. And, you know, and if it gets me out there and I can share these tools with even bigger audiences, yeah, I'm there, you know, and I'm just very, very grateful for these opportunities.
Well, we appreciate you as someone who has found your soul work and had the courage to go after it. What, you know, we define soul work as the best possibility, the best use of your passions and purpose. So what advice would you give to other people that might be listening who are wondering what their purpose is?
Well, I think it's about understanding your values and understanding your motivators. And even when I was at Lane Crawford setting up that wellness program, for me, it's about making conscious choices. And the conscious choices come from self-understanding. And if I reflect on all my choices throughout my life, there's a consistent theme of service and helping others. I'm also a teacher, naturally, and a leader, Boy Scout leader even. But sometimes it's hard to sit down and just say, okay, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because you have to embody it. And once you find something that captures your imagination, it's about, is it just temporary or is it going to be long lasting as well? And so many people give up on their passions because it's hard. This was not an easy path by any stretch of the imagination. People have no idea how hard I work behind the scenes. And this is my life and it's my choice. And I would never project what I do onto other people. But as a small entrepreneur in a very expensive city, doing something that is extremely esoteric and strange, I mean, I hit these round things, right? And I make people feel good. You know, I could have given up. My ex-husband was, you know, give it up. It's too hard. And it's like, well, to me, it's a hurdle. And if you really want it, you got to believe in it. And when when I first opened, I had 6 weeks to build a studio during Chinese New Year and open. And 2 days before he was to arrive, the contractors moved out and I'm scrubbing the floor, right? And I'm all that dust and yuck, you know, and I'm crying and I'm like, oh God, I'm going to lose all my money, you know? And this little, because I had the concert, I'd rented a venue and I'd only sold 7 tickets and I was sweating it. And this voice said, suck it up, you know? And I'm like, what do you mean suck it up? And I said, suck it up, you know, if you really want to do it, it'll happen. And I'm like, okay. And I put some loud music on and I got another bucket of hot water and I, you know, dried the tears and I finished cleaning the place. We had 100 people for the concert and we broke even and I haven't looked back. And whenever, you know, even COVID, I was closed for 2 years almost entirely. And I was able to keep going and hunkered down and I couldn't travel. And I was able to do enough trainings in Hong Kong to stay open. And not only stay open, I actually did fairly well, but I don't have a plan. I mean, if you're a business owner and you think you should have a business plan and, you know, every year you're going to increase the growth by a certain amount in gongs, this is an inspired practice. You know, it's a spiritual practice and it doesn't work that way. You have to believe, and I will get enough, and I'm not greedy. I have enough to live on. And I think you have to see it as a calling as opposed to a job.
Well, I believe everyone has a calling, but not everyone is willing to stick with it long enough to realize it.
Yeah.
And I love your courage. Story. Yeah. Sorry. It takes a lot of courage. It takes courage, persistence. Yeah. It takes faith. Yeah. So thank you, Martha, for sticking with it and helping so many people, including myself. I wish you all the blessings and success that you can get to your vision and help more and more people. If you are in the corporate world and you want to help your folks in your organization, think about studying with Martha. Martha, how do our listeners learn more about you and your programs?
They can easily find me on my website. It's www.red-doors.com. And I'd be delighted to, hear from any of your listeners. And of course, work with you again. So I'll have to visit Michigan or wherever. We'll find each other.
Maybe I'll find you in the Hamptons or Hong Kong. You never know.
Well, now we can travel. So
yeah, have a beautiful day. Thank you so much for being with us. We so appreciate you.
Thank you. Delighted to be here, and take care.
Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.